Hey, this is Wolf Hoffman from Accept, and I'll give you the right to rock.
The right to rock.
Texas, you're listening to the Right to Rock Podcast, the only heavy metal and hard rock show on the net made by fans for fans. And now get ready for two guys who are so metal, they pour motor oil on their cereal. It's Genghis and Ragman.
This is Genghis. This is Ragman. And we have a special night for you. And ain't meeting with our featured artists. So we want to give you the most of what Genghis and I can do with an artist. We want to give you everything we can do with an artist. So, that's a killer masterpiece theater meeting.
That's very good.
I feel like I'm classical or something like this. I don't know how I did.
It makes me want to speak in a very elevated tone. I want to say a shout out to all of our viewers and listeners.
I feel English. I do, English and starting Russian at the same time. I don't know.
Starting to feel very British. As I sip upon my ale.
We should toast to our guest in Biju Adu because we have a great interview.
That's right.
That's almost poetic.
I thank you all for joining us. Please listen to our interview and enjoy.
And we will talk to you next time.
Cheers.
See ya. Horns up.
Horns up.
Man, some classic, or somewhat classic, Accept. That was off the Objection Overruled record, and that was I Don't Want to Be Like You.
That was cool. Had a nice classic sort of sound.
I'd like to change it to I Don't Want to Be Like John.
Fuck you.
Yeah, John's with us tonight. I guess
sweet,
you guys all
as
know.
Always.
Yeah, we'll get into that on another show. Tonight is all about Accept, And
a little evening with action.
Yeah, yeah, an evening with Wolf Hoffman. How cool is that, man?
That's damn cool.
One of the pioneers of metal.
Yeah.
German band. One of the, I guess he, you know, you've got Scorpions, metal, German metal band from back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then who else do you think of back in the day? I think of Accept.
Pretty much, yeah. I think that's reasonable to say. Totally.
And I'll tell you what, evening with tonight, we've got a little bit of a video going. This is Accept, Metal Blast from the Past, which is a really cool DVD that came out a few years ago that has a full show from Osaka, Japan, back in 85.
Back,
I believe, on the Metal Heart Tour.
Cool.
So, really cool stuff. It's got a bunch of video clips.
That's right up our alley, dude.
Oh, yeah, totally. And then it's actually... the guys have actually included some stuff from like 93 when they got back together. And they're back together again, which you all know by now, I'm sure. If you don't, you've been under a rock. They've got a brand new record out called Blood of the Nations. So what we get
are you speaking of the CD of the month, dude?
It could have been.
Over at the Right to Rock?
Had you been on the Right to Rock page, which I'm sure you guys have, you've checked out that Ragman's has stolen CD of the month the last 2 months straight.
No shit, dude. That's because I'll be listening to the album like I was all about that James LaBrie.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, I'm going to totally put it on there.
And I'm donning the shirt tonight.
I had that, which is rocking.
Well, I tell you while we open our beer, let's play something off the new record. Let's play, I guess, probably the biggest single, or the first single, Teutonic Terror. Great fucking track. Let's check it out.
Yeah, I mean, he's been with them since, what, like, early 80s? 1980, maybe?
I think
a little before.
Wolf, 70s. He's 70s, one of the founding members, I believe.
Because, I mean, technically, I think they started, what, like, 1968 with Udo, and
yeah,
he founded it a long-ass time ago. It was a different name, but, I mean, they finally became Accept, like, in 76 or some shit like that?
Yeah, like, 76, and then they had a string of records, and it wasn't until, I guess, Restless and Wild when the band kind of broke out and... kind of made a name for themselves in the track. And I guess we could, you know, we're going to play a little bit of music before we get into our interview with Wolf. But the track, I think, that really broke them was probably Fast as a Shark. And it's got this really cool, like, look at your list of this, like, old record from, like, you know, I don't know, the 20s. And it's like a European thing, and the song may be older than that.
Damn.
And then it kicks into Udo screaming. So let's check out Fast as a Shark. I know. that song never gets old. I remember when that song came out, we were all freaked out so much. Or not freaked out, we loved the song so much. Mm-hmm. We would just crank that son of a bitch. And when we get in a crowded area, you'd have this,
like an old like German folk song or some shit like that.
Yeah, exactly. And then when Udo screams, we're all like screaming and we got it cranked up.
That's
and it's funny, you'd be everybody be like, oh, what's going on? Yeah, that's really cool. During the break there though, we opened a beer.
This is
and I guess we should be drinking German beer, but we're not.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of screwed the pooch on that one. But hey, you know, it's all fits into the under the aegis of the Right to Rock.
True.
I don't know. We had too much of this. But let's get to the beer.
What do we drink?
The beer is actually, it is crafted in southern Spain. This is Alhambra. This is Alhambra Negra. And it's a pretty good fucking beer. It's it's a Dunkel style beer. Which we talked about before, and it's apparently it's a product of Spain. Says all over this fucking thing. I think technically it's from like Granada or Cordoba or something like that. But it's like a dark lager beer.
Cordoba.
Yeah, it's got a real good taste to it. It's a pasteurized beer. It's got a. You got some old pictures coming up.
I'm sorry, we're watching a Succept video, and I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No problem.
But you know how, like, when you go with your family and you go to like New Mexico, and you get the little pictures taken in the, like the Western gear.
Oh yeah, yeah,
and stuff like that.
That's what it looked like.
they had Succept dressed up like that. It must have been on tour, like some Texas town or New Mexico.
Then,
or something.
It's like the first time they ever went out of their country to a whole of like the United States, which for them was probably huge.
Oh yeah, totally.
And plus, you know, they were like, let's do the whole thing, right? Like mm-hmm. we're touring the States. Because back then, that was still fairly, you know, novel, right?
Oh yeah, totally.
This was before fucking. Remember, it was a big deal when they played when not they, but when bands played in Russia for the first time back mm-hmm. with that Cold War shit going on. So they were probably all enjoying the shit. Look at Udo.
Well, you know what's. It's interesting because when they first came over, and we'll get into this a little bit with Wolf later on the show, but when I talked to Udo, he didn't really remember this, but years ago when they came over here for the Balls to the Wall tour, they toured with Saxon. And I think I've told this story probably a dozen times where I actually met the band.
Uh-huh.
And they did, Udo's English wasn't very good. Uh-huh. And
kind of
after talking,
like Klaus Meiner or something.
Yeah, well, after talking to Wolf, he was like, Udo's English wasn't very good back then, but you know the rest. You know, his English was good. So had I talked to Wolf, he may have understood what the fuck I was saying. But at that point, he didn't know what I was talking about.
So you talk like Dr. Haida.
Yes.
From Human Centipede.
Yeah, we're talking about this. It's getting close to Halloween, and there is a fucked up new movie called The Human Centipede, which we'll get into on another episode. But
yeah. Suffice to say, you should check it out.
Yeah, it's set in Germany. Somewhere in Germany.
Yeah. With Mr. Dr. Heiter, he's going to join the ranks of, like, Leatherface and all the other crazy ass.
Exactly.
Freddy Krueger, he's a new fucking crazy dude. But
Reanimator guy.
No shit. Like Herbert West, Dr. Herbert West. But anyway, back to Accept. We don't want to get too far off the topic, especially since it's an evening with.
Sure.
So Accept, when was the first time you ever heard Accept?
First time I ever heard them, I believe it was on the radio, first radio station when we talked about Dio years ago, or not years ago, but months ago on our Dio tribute after Ronnie passed away.
Mm-hmm.
There's a station called KPFT here in town. It's more of an independent station, and they had a metal program. Yeah, that came on like Friday, Saturday nights. I can't remember exactly, but I heard Fast as a Shark, freaked out, went out and bought Restless and Wild. And then proceeded to buy the back catalog.
Nice. So you went all out. It affected you that strongly. Like, I gotta get more of this stuff.
Well, that's the way I was back in the day too.
Was there anything like that at the time? I mean, was it just that it was so new and unique, or was it just metal was really getting to be a big thing for you, and this was when metal was? Because you were quote unquote. I mean, you started with bands like Kiss, mm-hmm. who by today's standards wouldn't be called metal,
right?
But so was this like, I liked Kiss, but this is like, these guys are taking it a step further.
Oh, yeah, they took it to a new level.
And you were just like, I got to get all into this. So.
Oh, yeah, okay, I think so it was one of the heavier things I had heard at the time.
Nice.
I'm trying to think. I think Restless and Wild came out in like 81, 82.
Uh-huh.
And that's a time where, I guess, Slayer was coming out with Show No Mercy. And that record, even though it was heavy, it wasn't to where the boys got once they got to like Rain and Blood.
Right.
Or even like Hell Awaits. That stuff got pretty intense. And then I think that came out before Kill 'Em All, too.
Okay.
So it was one of the heavier things out there at the time, and I really dug it. I'm trying to think back exactly, though, it's kind of tough. But I remember hearing, at that time was when I heard Dio, Y&T, and Accept for the first time.
Nice.
I remember specifically, those were the bands.
That's a good mix, you know, to get on that, those kinds of bands all together.
And then the early Sabotage and Omen and bands like that, the heavier, just pure heavy metal bands that were borderlining that thrash edge. And, you know, once Metallica came out, Kill 'Em All, that really came out, you know, determined this new thrash, this new era of music. And I think at that point, you know, Slayer kind of took from that. But if you look at a band from Accept, they took like the melody of like the Scorpions, a band that was huge in their country, and then heavied it up and made it more aggressive.
Uh-huh.
I think Restless and Wild was probably the heaviest record the band ever did. I mean, there were maybe heavier produced records,
right?
But it was a pretty heavy record.
Cool.
And then we get to Balls to the Wall,
which is where I came in,
but got a little bit more commercial.
Right, right. And that's where I first heard it.
And one of those,
which probably where a lot of people first heard it.
And probably one of their best records, one of the better records in their catalog. It's the one that they're most known for.
Oh, yeah, totally. And that's I mean, that song is everywhere, dude. It's become like a staple of metal songs. I mean, Balls to the Wall, it was on Beavis and Butthead. It was the name of a film, by an unreleased film by Penelope Spheris, the chick who did
really?
The Decline of Western Civilization in the middle years.
I didn't know
and,
that. What was the movie going to be about?
I don't know. I'm looking at the trivia for the song, for Accept, really, and they just said Balls to the Wall is featured in the yet unreleased film of the same name directed by Penelope Spheris. It's also been in, you know, all the, you know, a lot of video games, like, you know, Grand Theft Auto, Vice City Stories. And it was in that movie The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke.
Mm-hmm.
And it was chosen at number 38 in VH1's 40 Greatest Metal Songs. So, I mean, it's been around a while, so it's become a classic.
I'll tell you what, let's play something off that record, and I guess Balls to the Wall would be the obvious choice, so let's pick something a little different. No, I always liked Losers and Winners. That's a cool track. Let's check that out.
Why they're so popular, like you said, they had that kind of Scorpion sound, which, you know, to this day, Scorpion's still one of the people's favorite metal bands from the era. I mean, and there's, and I don't know if that's, if that's, if they sound like the Scorpions because they were fans of them, they kind of emulated that sound, whether it was deliberate or not, or if maybe there's even, I always wonder things like this, is there an overall sort of German metal sound that maybe is influenced by who knows what, maybe old German folk songs or whatever, I don't know, but where they all are going to kind of sound the same. Like, I guess you could probably, maybe people in other countries might say, oh, I bet you that's an American metal band because it has that American metal sound. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right, just like British metal. You always know when you're hearing a British metal song. It has that certain sound to it.
Yeah.
Or in today's day and age, to give it maybe a more modern comparison, Scandinavian metal, that kind of Norwegian metal sound. You know when you're hearing like Norwegian metal kind of stuff because it just has that sound. And I always wonder, like, does that come from the land that they're from? Like, the music of that particular part of the world influences the kids who grow up there? And even though they're metal, you know, it's sort of like it's flavored by that kind of area of the world, the music of that era, area, or what? I don't know. But there's no question that Accept has become, you know, one of the classic metal bands of the
era. Oh, yeah, totally.
Just like the Scorpions.
And just to go back to the Scorpions comparison, I don't know if I'd really say that they sounded like the Scorpions. But
yeah,
I
not like confuse them or anything.
I think they kind of picked up where, you know, the Scorpions laid the foundation. They took that and said, hey, we're going to heavy it up. But you know what's interesting? As they went on in their career up until, well, they did Metal Heart, which was a lot more melodic. There's still some heavy stuff on there.
Right.
A great track on there, Midnight Mover. I know you know that track. Let's play that. That's killer. It was a single, but let's check it out.
Oh.
They get more melodic, and then they put out Russian Roulette, which was probably one of the weaker records, I think, that in the band's history.
Yeah, because, I mean, you have to figure they're not going to necessarily sustain that momentum all the time. It's just not possible. Even your favorite metal bands of today, just they can't keep it up all the time. So that was, you say, their turning point. They kind of started out small, built up, and then kind of hit a peak, and then maybe started to go down.
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe they peaked on Balls to the Wall, but I really dig Metal Heart too.
Yeah, no, that's another classic.
Metal Heart was a lot more melodic, but then Russian Roulette, it just seemed like they kind of, I don't know. I should have asked Wolf about that. You know what happened on that record? Or maybe he thinks it's a classic. I don't know.
Like, why'd you get something on that?
But after Russian Roulette, Udo's gone, and they get David Reese. It was with the band called Bangalore Choir for a record. And I guess that didn't last long, which we'll hear about in the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess a few years after that, Udo comes back. They do 3 or 4 records, and then it's on and off. They do reunions here and there. And then you come to 2010, and they say, okay, Udo, let's do it again. Let's get back together. Udo said, I'm not into it. You have my blessing. Move on. And
that's the thing. I mean, he was he's been kind of in and out of the band, been there since the beginning,
but has not necessarily stayed there. Kind of like, I don't know, like Rob Halford or somebody like that. So is that, was there any real antagonism between each other? Did they like really hate each other or anything? Or did he just feel like, you know, I'm a little burnt out, I need to take a break or whatever?
Once we get into the interview,
yeah, I don't want to take away from the actual interview if that's what the word.
Udo, and I didn't know this, how much, you know, he was one of the founding members of the band,
yeah.
But there were times where he was in and out,
right,
and
right,
kind of volatile. And not just the time when David Reese took over, but there were times that, you know, they didn't know what they were going to do. So I said, I don't want to give too much up.
Yeah.
But when it came to put this together in 2010, I said, Udo, come on, let's do it. And he said, no. I think he was, and we talked to Udo about a year ago, and Udo said, you know, hey, they came to me. I didn't want to give up my my solo band. I'm very happy with my solo band. And I think he wasn't sure how long it was going to last. So, you know, if they were in for the long haul to do this for a long time, Udo basically said, you know, maybe I would have done it, but I didn't get that full commitment that we could keep it together that long. So I didn't want to sacrifice my solo band. So, you know, the recruit, Mark Tornillo, I hope I didn't butcher his name, from T.T. Quick.
Right.
And if you don't know T.T. Quick, they had a couple records out in the 80s. Not too bad. They did a really cool cover of Fortunate Son by CCR.
Oh, nice.
And if we can find it, we'll plug it in. But that may be tough to find. I don't know. So
it's like hard to get a hold of.
Yeah.
Single or whatever.
If we can find that on Amazon or iTunes or something like that, we'll plug that in. You'll hear it right now. But if not, don't be a deal. But
he basically, I mean, he became the new voice of Accept, huh?
Pretty much. And you know what? I was prepared, especially after talking to Udo. And I'm not going to be totally honest here. I was honest with Wolf, too. When I interviewed Udo about a year ago, he said, oh, you got to go to their site. They're redoing these songs. And listen to their site. And he sounded like he started to get kind of irritated that, you know, maybe they were kind of ruining the name a little bit with this new guy. Uh-huh. And I went to the site, I listened to the demos, and demos weren't that strong. And I was like, oh, fuck, man. Love Accept. You know, what are they doing here? And then, lo and behold, this new record comes out. I was prepared to hate it.
Yeah.
But I was intrigued because I'm an Accept fan.
Right. I mean, it's like their first original album in a long time, isn't
it? Yeah, totally.
Since Predator, I guess?
Yeah.
And who was producer on that? One of the pretty big shots?
Andy Sneap.
Yeah. I mean, he's done some pretty big names, right?
Totally.
I mean, some heavy dudes.
Yeah.
Testament.
Lots
of Megadeth. Exodus. Shit. So did that sway you? Did you feel like, okay, with Mark, and you're probably a fan of Mark, right?
Or, oh, yeah.
With Andy on the thing, you're like, this might come out to be pretty good.
I can't say I'm the hugest fan of Mark. Oh, okay. I liked some of the stuff he did with T.T. Quick, but I wasn't blown away he was an Accept at the time. But when I heard Andy Sneap was producing, I'm like, okay, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to give it a chance. So, to be fair, before I got the record, I heard a track on Eddie Trunk's show. And first time I heard it, I was like, it's okay, you know, whatever. And then I think I heard Teutonic Terror. I was like, yeah, I like that. That's pretty cool.
I heard that actually did really well.
Yeah, yeah. And then I got the record, and I'm like, whoa, how fucking cool is this thing? I tell you what, let's play something off it. Let's play Time Machine. Cool track. Let's check it out. Upon this rock, flying without wings.
I would say that they've got pretty good sound going.
Oh yeah, totally. And the great thing about this record, if you read my review, was it's not, okay, we're trying to be a band of the new millennium or the 90s, or right. We're not trying to totally rehash the past.
Exactly.
But what they've done is they've gone back and got the best aspects of their classic sound of the 80s and modernized it, so it doesn't sound dated.
Cool.
Killer fucking record. And Mark does a fine job. And, you know, as much as I love Udo, I can accept this because it's a great record.
Intent.
You know what I'm saying?
And so, and again, I'm not quite sure. So Udo is kind of like giving his blessing to this new version of Accept and the new album, or no?
Well, sort of.
Okay.
He basically said, you guys do what you got to do.
Fair enough.
And,
well, that's cool. I mean, if he's at least gracious about it, I don't blame him if he's not totally happy about it. But if he's at least gracious about it, then you can kind of say, okay, that's cool, whatever.
But I've heard he's made a few comments.
Has he?
Okay, he actually made a few comments on our show. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, considering that, like you said, I mean, the guy started this thing rolling, you know, back in like 68.
Yeah.
If you want to go all the way to the beginning, the technical, right. the sort of genesis of the band. You know, so I can see him being like, this is kind of my gig. I'm not saying, you know I left.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like, obviously I'm going to be a little, you know, jealous if someone else takes my place. So I guess I can understand that.
Oh, yeah. It fucking Mark's the real deal. And I love David Reese as a vocalist, but the record he did with him, not the best. And this record with Mark, and not to say he's an Udo clone, but...
he's able to do the old shit and do it reasonably well while giving the life to the new shit and making some nice stuff.
He's got more of a closer vocal style to Udo than Reese did. And hit some mark on this record. So I'm pretty bummed out because I missed it when they made a stop here in Houston. I was out of town, so I didn't get to see the show. Playing with King Sex.
Oh, fuck.
Which kills me.
Yeah.
But hopefully, they'll come back. We'll be able to check it out. But anyway, guys, we're going to wrap it up. And we're going to get to this interview because it fucking rocks. It's killer.
Wolf
Hoffman's the man.
Nice.
So before we leave, we want to give you two big holds up.
Hey, this is Wolf Hoffman from Accept, and you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up.
That will put your balls to the wall. He'll shove a flying V up your ass. Mr. Wolf Hoffman from Accept. Give it up, people. Wolf, how you doing this evening?
Hey, man, I'm doing great. I don't know about the shoving V up people's asses, but if you insist, I can give it a try. Yeah.
Well, you know, we're going back to the old school, the old Restless Wild cover. This time, though, we won't ask you to set it on fire or anything like that.
That's right. Okay, cool.
Unfortunately, Genghis couldn't join us tonight. He is probably drunk somewhere in a gutter. That kind of happens to him. So, Wolf, it's going to be you and I tonight.
That's fine, man. That's rock.
Oh, one thing I will tell you, too, if you're not familiar with the show, towards the end of the show, we'll ask you what your favorite beer is. We talk about great imported beers on this show, and Germany is probably the mecca for great beer. So
I have to say it is. It is.
But anyway, before we get with that, let's talk about your new record and the reformation of Accept. You have a great, I'm talking great, new record called The Blood of the Nations. Before we get started with that, and I'm sure you've been telling this story a million times, but kind of tell us how the pieces kind of fell together. When did you guys come up with the idea to say, you know what, let's put this back together again? It's been too long for the guys, and they need more Accept.
Yeah, it really didn't really happen like that. It's really all... One day we met Mark Tonillo by chance and ran into him at a jam session. And that's when we decided, man, we need to start Accept again. It wasn't the other way around, that we were looking for a singer and auditioning people and all that. It was truly by chance that we'd met Mark. And after, when we heard him sing, we figured, Peter and I looked at each other and felt like, man, here's the guy. Here's our man. He's the key to all this. Because we always wanted to go back out as Accept, but Udo always turned us down. He said he didn't have any interest, so we, you know, didn't have anybody. And, you know, it never crossed our mind to look for people because we felt Accept was so unique and there might not even be anybody out there. But then one day we heard Mark sing. Like I said, we were actually doing a jam session one day in New Jersey about a year ago, and we invited this guy that somebody suggested lives close by, and he had a great voice, and he'd probably just join us, so... That's what we did, and here comes Mark Tonillo coming into the studio and takes his shirt off and starts singing, and we're just blown away, man. We figured, where did this guy come from? We'd never heard of him before, and we asked him that night whether he wanted to join us and wanted to be an Accept, and the next day, everybody was on board, and we announced it to the world, we're going to start Accept again. So, there, that's how it happened.
That's awesome. Well, how long had you and Peter been kind of jamming and saying, I guess it's been about 4 years since you guys, 4 or 5 years, I guess, since you guys had played out.
Right. Yeah, in 2005 we played a bunch of festivals all over Europe, and we hadn't really done anything since. And I was visiting Peter at the time, so I figured, let's just make some noise and have some fun and just crank some riffs and stuff, you know. But that was all we wanted to do initially.
Well, the thing about the record, and let's start getting into the record here, is when I put it in, you know, I didn't know what to expect. I think I'd heard a song on the radio and wasn't completely blown away the first time. And, you know, being an old school guy, which I'm sure a lot of people out there, and I want to get the word out there, that being an old school guy, you're thinking, okay, how do you have Accept without Udo? I mean, you guys had done it once with David Reese years ago.
Right.
Then, you know, how are you going to do it? And I got to say, Wolf, and I'm not kissing your ass because I'm talking to you, because I'm going to rave about this thing. I put the CD in, and I was blown away because you guys really went back to the Accept roots and have created, I think I'm on to something here. Possibly the next classic Accept record. This thing is amazing, and I love it in that you guys really kind of went back to your roots, and it reminded me of the early days of like the Restless and Wild type stuff, and maybe some stuff even previous to that. Am I on track with what I'm saying here?
I mean, you're not the only one to say that, and I'm very happy about that, because that's what we intended to do. We wanted to write stuff that is reminiscent of the past. We didn't want to try anything new here. We just tried to give the fans more of what they already liked back in the day, and just with a fresh sound and a bunch of fresh ideas. That's all we tried to do, and I guess we succeeded. You know, it comes across as that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Make me happy.
And definitely, and you guys did succeed, because, like I said, going in, I wasn't sure what to expect, and I knew Mark from TT Quick.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah.
I was a TT Quick guy.
I never honestly had seen Mark in the past. And, of course, after we met, I checked out his stuff, and, you know, it was somewhat, you know, it's great stuff. But I wasn't really that familiar with this stuff before at all.
Oh, next time you see Mark, which I'm sure will be tomorrow, tell him I sent him high props for the version of, they did a cover of CCR's Fortunate Son that is just off the charts. It's awesome.
Excellent. Very cool.
But, yeah, his voice, you know, I mean, I know you probably didn't say, okay, I want you to come in here and sound like Udo. You probably said, Mark, just give it your all and let's see what happens. And, you know, his style is close enough to Udo's, but, you know, he can take it to another level, too, where he can sing like a softer type tune where, you know, Udo could do, but it wasn't quite as... it didn't come off as well, and I'm not bagging on Udo at all. I love Udo, but he's got a more versatile voice, I guess is what I'm trying to say, to where he can do a few more things than Udo could do, and he really shows that off on this new record.
Yeah, I mean, we felt the same thing when we first met him. We felt like, holy cow, this is amazing. He's got all that, what we need, and then some, you know, so... He can definitely do the old material really well. All the old songs, all the classic songs that fans want to hear, he can do all those perfectly. But at the same time, especially on his new material, he can really do stuff that's off the charts, you know, and it really brought us to another level, I felt. But, I mean, honestly, our songwriting wasn't that much different. The approach was exactly the same as what we've always done. It was usually... Peter and I sit together and crank out the first riffs and song ideas, and eventually Mark comes to the table and puts his part in, and that's how we've always done it.
Well, you know, the first track to really kind of kick my ass here is Teutonic Terror, which I guess is the first single and first video off the record. How did that song come together, and how did you pick it for the first video?
It was all based on a riff that Andy Sneak liked in particular. Actually, funny enough, I've been working on some classical material a while back that I played to Andy, and there's a particular riff on there that we ripped off and built that song around it. And we felt it just had that certain snap, and you know, one thing led to another. We kind of built the song from there, from that metal riff that I was using along with classical music, funny enough. And we picked it as a video because it really set all the elements that you need. It's got a, you know, the sing-along type back and vocals on it. It's got a great guitar, fiddle eight section in there, and, you know, it sounds typical Accept. We felt that it was the strongest contender for a video, especially as a first pre-release song.
Honestly,
we could have always picked a different one, and it would have been almost similar. I think this album is full of strong songs. You know, so many strong ones on there. It's hard to really pick a favorite for me.
Oh yeah, I agree. I think that, like I said, I think the first one that really stuck out to me was that one. And just to go back to the video for a second, it looked like you guys were having a lot of fun in that. And how long has it been since you guys had done a video?
Oh my gosh, forever.
That's what I was thinking, man.
We did one in the 90s for a song called, what was it? Let me think here. Protectors of Terror. Nobody has ever seen it. It wasn't very good, I don't think. And we've done one for Death Row, which was equally mediocre. And I mean, we haven't really done any good video. I mean, this is probably the best we've ever done, honestly. We've had tremendous luck with this one because David Blatt, the producer, really... is also a metal fan, and he knew, you know, what fans want to see. And, you know, even just the location is so fabulous, and the whole way that's been filmed was just out of this world.
And that's what's cool about the video, too, is it's kind of that post-apocalyptic kind of look. And then, but the greatest thing for a fan like me is to see these metal icons on film. Look, I mean, it looks genuine that you guys are just having a good old time. And
you know, when we were talking about the video initially, there were some suggestions about having a story, telling a story about this guy and this girl, or, you know, all this kind of stuff. And at the end of the day, I just said to Dave, you know what, why don't we just forget all that stuff and just show the band having a good time playing metal music and nothing else, just a performance video in a cool location. Isn't that what, I mean, who needs a story? being told about it. You know, a lot of times you see these videos and these stories, they kind of, you get lost in them and they don't really translate that well. I think, in, especially in our case, it's not really about any stories. It's really about the band playing metal, and that's what it's all about.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And one of the greatest videos of all time, and I guess most iconic videos that you guys ever did, was Balls to the Wall.
Right.
And, you know, you guys are known for that. And it kind of, you know, you guys doing the guitars in unison and stuff, and, you know, kind of gets your blood pumping as a fan. And then I liked the Midnight Mover video from years ago, but that thing just kind of gave me whiplash because all the camera work, you know.
Right, yeah, that was kind of premature for its day. Now it's more, now it's almost more common now to have this fast editing, but then... In those days, everybody was complaining, it's too fast, and I'm getting a headache, and all this kind of stuff. But it was actually a cool video.
Well, another track that I'm really digging is New World Coming. I think that's a really cool track that has kind of that classic Accept vibe to it as well. Do you have any special stories on how that song came together?
Some songs are just, like, I'm giving an example, Pandemic, for instance. It's so simple and so logical, we never changed much about it after it was first written. And then some other tracks, we go back and forth about them, and then, for instance, the title track, Blood of the Nations, was probably rearranged so many times. Even during the mixing, we were going in and changing bits because it just needs to be right, and we weren't quite sure, we weren't quite happy with it yet until it was perfect, you know. And then New World Coming was one of those tracks where we, you know, went several times back to it and readdressed it. But in the end, it turned out great, I think.
Is there a song, and I know you can't pick a favorite, but is there one that you're really enjoying playing live off the new record that's kind of kicking the asses of the fans out there?
Yeah, man, funny you ask, because this week we've gone through all the songs and played all of them several times during rehearsals, and there's certainly a few that stand out more than others as great live players. I'm going to say probably No Shelter is a great fun. There's a lot of fun to play.
That's a great tune.
And A Bucket Full of Hate also is a lot of fun to play.
Judas on your lips. You're following your script.
Pandemic. Those are good live tracks. Let's see what else. I mean, there's a lot of them, really. But those few ones really stand out.
How many new songs are you including in the set for this tour?
Oh, of course, Teutonic Terror also. That's a lot of fun. I mean, probably three or four is what we're thinking of right now. If we're doing a 90-minute set, three or four, because a lot of, I mean, fans haven't seen us in 14 years, so we're thinking they want to see a lot of the old classic stuff, first and foremost, and then some of the newer stuff.
Well, I think the great thing is you've got such a strong new record that, you know, maybe even as the tour goes on, you can even work in a few more new ones as well.
Right, so totally, and we'll leave this sort of up to the fans to tell us what they want to hear more or less. I mean, all this is open for discussion. We're not really so sure ourselves what fans want to hear. Sometimes you have to just go out there, do it, and see what works best, and then readjust.
Well, you guys, I guess before we talk about your tour coming up, you guys just recently played Prague Power. How did that go?
Oh, phenomenal. It was awesome. We had a great time. Perfect. Yeah, we got some great reviews. People loved it, and yeah, it was awesome. And we've done a bunch of festivals this summer already over in Europe. Huge festivals, as a matter of fact. Some of them, you know, 20,000 we played with AC/DC, there were 80,000 there each night, and you know, it's a huge compared to the U.S. what we're going to do here. But you know, it all doesn't matter as long as the fans enjoy what, and then we're enjoying it. So, and I think this upcoming tour is going to be great because it's going to be a medium-sized clubs, the House of Blues type venues that will allow us to put on a decent production and decent, you know, stage presentation, but at the same time, we'll be really close to the fans, and I think it's going to be good. I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing you, too. Let me ask you this, since you guys have played a few live shows, and it sounds like everything's going smooth, but, you know, when you replace a lead vocalist like Udo that's, you know, so right. well-known in the metal community, have you guys had any fallout from the fans, or has everybody pretty much embraced Mark?
Man, we were bracing for anything, really, because having gone through this before, we knew that there's going to be some people that are, you can't please everybody, obviously, but I'm telling you, man, everybody, it's bizarre. Everybody is immediately won over. You can see that there's a few fans coming to the shows that they're convinced it's going to suck, and but they're coming anyhow. For some reason, they just want to get, you know, they have to see it, and then they come with their arms crossed, first number, but after a few seconds, a few minutes, it all goes away, and people see how he sings and how fired up we are as a band, and then all the arms are up in the air, and it's as if it had never been any different. It's amazing. So we actually do win them over every time.
Well,
there's definitely some skeptics out there that are just convinced it can't be any good, but like I said, as soon as they hear the record, or as soon as they see us live, you know, that goes away.
Well, that's what I was about to say. Is as soon as people hear this record, they're going to realize that, you know, Mark's the real deal, and he
totally.
Is.
We've got some awesome reviews worldwide. I mean, we've got some. I mean, some people. I'm going to say, probably 99% of the people were convinced it's not going to work, and they let us know that even in advance. While we were making the record, we got all these comments online like, "Oh no, we don't know except it's going to suck," and we've been through this before. Blah blah blah. But I tell you, this all almost made us mad, and we almost put more effort into making this record, make sure it's really, really good. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Fired us up. And now everybody says, "Oh, man, I'm sorry. I had no idea it's going to be so good." And we even had some people apologizing online to us and publicly, and you know, because everybody was gave us the thumbs down initially, but now they're all like, "Oh, shit, we were wrong. This is really, really awesome." I mean, no, there's no bad vibes at all. Everybody's loving this new record so far.
Oh, yeah, it goes back to that motto, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So you ought to be thanking the fans for giving you shit.
I guess, yeah, I guess. And we almost have to thank Udo, too, because, you know, he said some things about us, and, you know, initially he turned us down and, you know, all these kind of things, and, you know, without him doing that, we probably would have never found Mark, and we wouldn't be here. So it's bizarre. Sometimes it's
how is your relationship with Udo now, and do you know if he's heard the new record?
I have no relationship with Udo, honestly, none at all. And he was there because he was doing this. He was playing or singing a song with somebody, but it wasn't with what you would expect. It was some other band, Lordy. And so he was there at the festival, and I went to say over to say hi, but he was sort of totally bizarre. He said, "Don't touch me and leave me alone." And I don't know what that all was about, and I left it at that. And I don't know. So I would say we probably have no relationship at all at this point.
Well, that's a shame. That's a shame. So I guess the thought of you guys ever doing any one-off in the late future may not ever happen. But like I said, the present is now, and you guys are rolling strong with Mark.
I mean, I've never had a problem with Udo. We always acted pretty respectfully towards each other when we saw each other. Even when we did the 2005 thing, it was all good. There wasn't any bad vibes or bad fights or nothing, but just recently he's been acting somewhat weird after, you know, he's almost acting like somebody who's been invited to a party and then decides not to go, and now he's pissed off that he, you know, that the party is a success without him. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, we had talked to him in the past, and he had mentioned to us that, you know, when the reunion was still just in its infancy phases, and you had just recruited Mark, and he basically said, you know, I don't know how long this will last, and I'm happy with my solo band, so good luck to them, and
right.
stuff like that. So I thought it was pretty good. I don't know, you know.
No, it's not that bad. I'm not going to rag on him or anything.
Oh, sure not.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, and since this is your second time to bring a different vocalist in the band, how is this experience different than the time when you brought David in the band and then to when you brought Mark in the band here?
It's completely different. I mean, those two scenarios couldn't be any more different. Because when we got Dave, we recruited him, it was... you know, completely different. We tried to change the style of the band. We were looking for somewhat of a new direction, and we tried to want to change too much all at once. And as everybody knows, it didn't go anywhere. But really, that wasn't really all David's fault, because he was actually a pretty good singer. It only, you know, it was a weird time. You know, the 90s, nobody really knew where it would all go. It seemed like heavy metal had run its course, and you know, nobody really know where to turn next. And we tried an experiment and expanding our style, and it just, you know, wasn't meant to be. That's all. But now it's all different. It's 20 years later, and we know exactly where Accept stands and where we belong and what we want to do. And we just happened to find the right guy at the right time to help us do that. So we didn't really want to take Accept in a different direction at all. We knew exactly what we wanted to do.
That's interesting. That's very interesting, because I have been kind of curious about this since, you know, the you guys recruited Mark and so forth. And you're right, you know, you guys had gone for a different style, and David, I agree, he's got a great set of pipes on him, and but you guys had gone for a different style.
And on top of it, we never really got along personally, so it was just too many things gone wrong all at once, you know. The record didn't really turn out as we had hoped. The personality of David and ours didn't really go together that well. We never had a good chemistry in the band. And on top of it just wasn't accepted by the fans at all. So it was like too many things gone wrong. But you can't just blame that on one simple fact that it was a new singer, or you can't, you know, there's so many things that contributed to all this not working. And it's really unfair to blame it on David or anybody.
Well, another quick question, just going back in the past a little bit here. When you guys first reunited back with Udo and did a run of records, you know, Objection Overruled, Predator, and Death Row, do you think that had those records, I mean, it was like, again, you hit the nail on the head, it was a weird time in the 90s, and I was just so glad you guys were putting out music. But do you think if those records had done better, that you guys might have continued on? I mean, I think they were good records, but I mean, commercially, you know, selling and so forth. Or do you think that, you know, hey, we did what we did, and we decided, you know, we were going to take a break, and, you know, here we are now, and we're going full steam ahead?
I don't know. It's all hypothetical of what would have happened if. The fact of the matter is that Udo had left except in 1989 to have his own band. And for a good reason, because, you know, we sort of wanted different things. He came back briefly during the 90s, but then he was gone again. And it's a long-going thing with him and the band, you know. And he says there's no chemistry in the band. And so I guess I don't think it would have changed anything if this album would have been more successful. It's just, you know, we never really sort of gelled together that well in the 90s or after the initial 80s phase. And even early on, he was out of the band very often. And it's always been this sort of rift between him and the rest of the band. And that's an ongoing thing. That's just a fact. And, you know, sometimes it's always hard for the fans to accept that because obviously you sell yourself as a package or the band or the lead singer, blah, 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 but, you know, the truth is sometimes that it's always been a, you know, somewhat of a clash internally.
Well, you know, that it seems like that chapter of the Accept book is closed, and now you got this brand new chapter, and you guys are going full steam ahead. Let me ask you this. You know, what are you seeing for the long haul here? Are you guys going to go with this record, do some touring, and you're taking a break? Are you hitting the studio again, or is it too early to tell? But I guess what I'm trying to ask here is, can we count on Accept for a while?
Yeah, of course, everybody's leery of that. Yeah, man, that's what we want to do. I mean, we're putting all this effort into it because we really want to do this long term.
That's awesome.
Really, are we already thinking about another record and we're going to go on the road again? And obviously, we can't afford to have another long break like that. We don't want to stay away for another 14 years because we would love this too much for to let it go this time. Nobody can look in the future. Who knows what happens? But I mean, I can tell you from all our intentions, we want to make this count, and we want to keep this going, definitely. Because now we got something that's really special, I think.
Oh yeah, I agree, and I can't wait to see you play this summer. Let's talk about the tour. You guys are going out with King's X, which, when I heard that, man, I tell you what, I got excited. What a great build that's going to be. And you're talking about you guys are going to do a little House of Blues tour.
Right.
I don't know if I told you, but we're here in Houston, and I know you guys are playing the House of Blues here in Houston. And so that's what a great venue and what a great place to see you guys.
Yeah, man, that's going to be awesome. Aren't they from Houston or
yeah.
Dallas?
They're actually from Houston. Actually, Doug's a friend of the show. We've had him on several times, and just what a great guy. I don't know if you know him very well, but I think you'll enjoy.
Well, but I met him a couple times when he was out at Wagner Studio there on my farm a few years ago. Yeah, certainly met the guys, huh?
But great, great guys and very talented musicians. So you guys are going to give each other a run for the money every night. What a great double bill.
Yeah, that's what I think, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun, so I can't wait. And, you know, it's been so long that we've played in the United States, you know, that really looking forward to it, to reconnect with fans and such. We had such a blast this summer going to all these countries, you know, Eastern Europe and Germany and Scandinavia and Russia, and, you know, it's so great to see that fans are still out there, maybe more than ever, who really want to hear this music again. So, I mean, definitely we'll have to see what the situation here in the United States is, but I can tell you, all over Europe and stuff, it's just been phenomenal.
Well, you guys couldn't pick a better time, I think, to get back into it with the way metal is. I would say over the last 3 or 4 years, we've definitely seen a resurgence, and with satellite radio and programs like Eddie Trunk and, you know, us, hopefully, you know, and other metal webcasts, I think the time is right, and for a band that's been around as long as you guys are or have been, you got a new label and you're doing music videos. How cool is that? You know, 10 years ago that wouldn't have happened. You know,
I know, and I mean, just the fact that we have a major producer working with us, the fact that we have a major label, a real label nowadays, you know, and you know, a real video out. I think we're trying to do everything sort of, you know, like it's supposed to. We're not trying to do it all cutting corners, a homemade production and, you know, homemade video and all this kind of stuff. We're really trying to do this like first class, all of it, and I think it's paying off.
I agree. And I got a couple more questions for you, Wolf, and then we'll let you go this evening. But in regards to the video, this hit me today when I was watching it. Like I said, it looks like you guys are having so much fun. It made me crave a live DVD. So is there any thoughts of doing that on this tour, or are you going to wait a little bit longer?
No, we're actually going to start filming this tour. I think it's a little soon to release something, because we're just coming out in a new formation with a new record. I think it's maybe a little premature, but it's definitely in the pipeline somewhere here. I think we definitely want to start recording, and we're actually doing a somewhat of a special event in L.A. where they're going to film everything. Just details are just coming in every day now, but we're really going to have a lot of footage after this tour.
Oh, that's awesome. You guys will be able to put that in. That's what I was kind of thinking, is after the tour was over, when you guys go back to the studio, maybe put out a DVD to hold the fans over until you got a new product out. How long do you see this tour going on?
We'll probably spend the majority of next year touring, all in all, and then eventually probably go back to the studio. That's what I'm thinking, roughly. I mean, actually start writing on this tour. Peter and I already talked about it, that we're going to take our gear out on the road and see if we can come up with stuff while we're out there, because it's a lot of downtime a lot of times on the road, and it's a perfect opportunity to start laying down some riffs and some groundwork for the future.
That's awesome.
You know, yeah.
Well, in regards to the tour, the reason I ask is because when you guys play Houston, unfortunately, I'm going to be out of town, so... It's killing me, so I'm trying to figure out. I'm kind of working you here to see if you guys are going to be making another trek through the States before a new record, or am I SOL?
I think it's not really entirely up to us, but if we can, we definitely will try that, yeah. See, you know, right now a lot of people have not seen us in so long, and they don't really know what this band is doing and how long we're staying. I mean, I can tell you and everybody that we really have all the intentions, but at the end of the day, people just really want to see us first, and that's why we're doing this sort of meet and greet type tour, where we're playing smaller venues, where we're signing autographs, and we're reintroducing the band. It's the same exact thing that what we've done in Europe, and who knows what it's going to lead to. In Europe, it worked so well that we ended up playing with AC/DC and huge festivals and all this right after. And we're hoping we can do similar things here, to where we do the medium-sized tour first, and then people get to see us, and, you know, they get more confidence, and they book us for other venues. So there's a good chance that we come back here.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. And since you mentioned the meet and greet, I got to give you a little nostalgia story. I met you years, I'm talking years ago, back in the early 80s at Texas Tapes and Records. With you guys did an install with Saxon. You guys were on the Balls to the Wall tour, and
oh my gosh,
Saxon was on the Crusader tour.
Oh, yeah. I remember that tour, definitely.
And it was funny because, I don't know, I spoke to you and said hello, but I think I was trying to talk to Udo at one point, and I was complaining because I was underage. I was in high school at the time. And the club that we were supposed to see you at a venue, and then it got moved to a club, and then I didn't get to go to the show because I wasn't of age. But I was trying to explain it, and Udo was just looking at me like I was crazy, like, what is this guy saying? I don't understand.
Well, he didn't understand English very well in those days. He's a little better now, but he always had, you know, he had a hard time with English initially. So, I mean, I think he's better now, but that might have been the case. I don't know.
Well, I think it's awesome that you guys are doing that, because fans like myself, I mean, still enjoy getting to say hello to the artist, especially, you know, doing an interview with you like we are now. If I'm able to come up to you and by some miracle you remember, oh yeah, I remember talking to that guy on a Thursday night. You know, it'd be cool to meet you. So,
definitely. If you can make it, that'd be great, man.
If my trip falls through, I'm there.
Yeah, just make it fall through. How's that?
Hey, I'm going to give you my boss's number. two questions, and we're done, I promise. One of the last music-related questions here was, what was it like working with Andy Sneap, and how did that relationship form?
It all happened very similar, miraculously, just like we found Mark Ferrillo, we found Andy, just a mutual friend gave him our number, and we got a call, and Andy had heard that we, you know, working on a new record, and he was asking whether he could meet us. So he flew over from England to meet us, and, you know, just because he's been a huge Accept fan for all his life, he was really wanting to make this record, and we're so glad that he took that initial step, because we immediately became friends when we met him, and we talked with him, and it's been a great working relationship, and to this day, we're great friends, and he almost feels like another band member, more than a typical producer, you know. So it was a really comfortable relationship, and, you know, like I said, he's a big Accept fan all his life, so he knew all our stuff, and he really steered us into the right direction with his record. So I can't praise him enough. He's really been fabulous to work with.
It's got to be awesome, too. You know, these guys that grow up listening to you, and then they get the opportunity to produce one of their favorite bands. You know they're going to make the Accept record that they want to hear, too, you know?
Well, that's pretty much what he did. He made the Accept record that he wanted to hear as a fan, and, of course, he put all his effort and all his, you know, everything he's got, he put in it, and that really paid off. I mean, we put in long hours, and we made sure everything is as good as it possibly can be, and, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
I would do it again every day. I mean, next record, we definitely want to work with him again, and he knows it. So
that's awesome. Well, something I mentioned to you before we started the interview was another thing we do on the show is we talk about great beer. And I don't know if you're a beer drinker, but being from Germany, the beer capital of the universe.
Right.
What
is
your...
I mean, who's not a beer drink in Germany?
I got to tell you, man, I was there in March.
Right.
The wife and I went, and we saw a great German band called Rage.
Rage, yeah, okay.
They were playing, but... We did kind of a little tour of Bavaria there, and one of the best beers I had, and I know I'm going to butcher the name, is called Andeschoff. It's made by some monks right outside of Munich. It's a dark beer, a Dunkel. Amazing. But let me ask you this.
Well, good beer has been made by monks, you know, because, you know, it goes back hundreds of years, actually, because that was made in the monasteries there, and a lot of the beer was made by them. I think it actually goes back to some of the fasting tradition, don't they? Isn't that how it all came about?
Exactly. The beer was the thing that kind of kept them to where they, you know, wouldn't eat. They could just drink it and they could get full, and the heavier the beer, the more that they would be contained, you know?
Exactly, and they were happy.
Exactly.
Made them happy at the same time.
But, yeah, there's a monastery right outside of Munich, and we had this beer in this little restaurant right there in the old city. And it's kind of funny, before we did that, we went and took a tour of the Paulaner Brewery there in Munich, and that was pretty amazing.
Paulaner, yeah, good stuff. The Munich beer, the Bavarian beer. I'm going to have to say my favorite beer is probably Warsteiner or Pilsner Urquell, if you know.
Oh, the Czech beer.
Yep. And especially, funny enough, we've just been to Prague, and I have to say I had some of the best beer in my life. I just had right there the original Pilsner stuff. I mean, they sell Pilsner Urquell in Germany, but it's also very good. But the original stuff from over there, Czech beer, it's pretty darn good, I have to say.
Oh, there's some great Czech beers. That's for sure. You're making my mouth water. I'm going to have to go buy some tomorrow.
Well, I don't know what it is. It never tastes as good here than it does over there.
You're right.
The same stuff.
You're exactly. It just doesn't travel well when it's exported, I don't believe.
I wonder, somebody needs to explain this to me, whether they actually put something in there to make it more, to make the Food and Drug Administration happy, whether it has to have a longer shelf life, whether that all makes it different, or whether it's just the fact that it has been shipped, or what's going on. I don't know, but it's never as good here as it is over there.
Yeah, I agree. Whenever I have beer over there, it's always so much better than, you know, what you can get here in the States, that's for sure.
A state of mind, that you're in a better state of mind. I actually do believe it tastes a whole lot better.
Oh, I agree. I'll tell you one more, and then we'll get off beer, and I'm going to let you go because it's late, and I really appreciate you staying on with us so long. Have you ever had the Kulmbacher Schwarz?
I'm not sure. Probably not.
You got to try it out next time. You actually can get it here some places, but when you're home, look for that. If you're into dark beers.
Not so much. I'm actually more into the lagers. The lagers. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, you like some really good ones. The Vorsteiner and the Pilsner Urquell, those are really good ones. That's for sure.
Work on. See, now I want some.
Me too. Well, Wolf, we want to congratulate you on a great new record, Blood of the Nations, and we want to tell all the fans to go out there and get Blood of the Nations on Nuclear Blast Records. And Wolf, before we let you go tonight, is there anything you want to tell the fans?
Well, we're just happy to be back and hope to meet everybody on the road on this little American tour that we're doing. And if you can't make it or if you need more info, just make sure you go to acceptworldwide.com. All one word, acceptworldwide.com. You find all the cool videos and all the links to all the other cool sites on there. So everything you ever wanted to know about Accept is right on there. Tour dates and merchandise and all that good stuff. So, hope to see everybody out on the road.
Well, Wolf, we want to thank you for coming on the RightToRock.com and the Genghis and Ragman show. It was truly an honor to talk to you, sir.
Well, same here. I had a blast.
Ragman, and you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G, who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Man song, which is the theme song to the Right to Rock podcast. And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X, Adam and Joseph, have lent us 13 to finish the show, so what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out. And keep checking us out. And horns up.